Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
If you haven't seen the movie Hacksaw Ridge, I encourage you to go see it at some point. It's an amazing tale. Actually, it was based on a true story of the only Medal of Honor award winner in our country who was a conscientious objector to war. And he was basically there on a mission to care for those who had been injured in battle. And he really epitomizes and summarizes the it factor we're going to be talking about this morning, and that is this idea of being entrusted. See, when he was up there on that hill, he just had this sense that his mission there was that the unit that he was attached to, that these men, their lives had been entrusted to his care, and it was his mission to care for them and to make sure they were all came back alive if possible. And so he just had that sense, I got to go get one more. What would drive somebody in the face of an enemy or in face of a dangerous situation to go back into a war zone unarmed simply to rescue people out of it? It was the idea that they were entrusted to his care. As we've been looking at the it factors in this series, just looking at basically what was it about Jesus that drew people to him? What was it about Jesus that made people who were nothing like him want to be around him? Blue-collar people, white-collar people, people of every race, of every age, of every socioeconomic class, regardless of the religious background, people loved to be around him. And it's hard to sort of pinpoint that, if you will, sometimes, as you look through and say, what was it about him? Because, every church in America is trying to be like Jesus, yet every church in America has a difficult time reaching people who are nothing like them, if you will. And so what was it about Jesus? And if I were to put my finger on one of the it factors, there's 12 of them that we have listed out there in the lobby, if I were to put my finger on one of them and say, this is probably the single most important one that is sort of that thing that's hard to define, that's easy to miss if you're not looking for it, it'd be this idea of entrusted. Because it's one of those things where it's a personal conviction. It's not something that somebody comes out and says, well, I'm here caring for you because I feel like you're entrusted to me. That would be very awkward. But you know when somebody has that sense that they've been entrusted to care for somebody. You see it in the way that somebody cares for somebody, thinks about somebody, believes in somebody even when nobody else does because they've been entrusted to their care. You see this oftentimes, or you should see this, in the parent-child relationship. There's something odd, mysterious, miraculous, I don't know what the right word is, about when you bring this child home from the hospital and you're looking at this baby and you're thinking to yourself, like the nurses are like, yeah, you need to go home. And you're like, really? No supervision? This is just mine to care for? And you have this feeling like, if you leave me alone with this kid, I'm going to kill it. I don't know what I'm doing. And the hospital is kind of like, well, you can't stay here. And it's almost like you feel like as if you're being pushed out of the nest. You know what I'm talking about? But you come home and you're just absolutely filled with this sense of awe as well as completely terrified. And you're terrified because what if I don't live up to the task which I've been charged with? And that's because you know that God has entrusted the care of this life to you, and you don't want to mess it up. And God's hope for you and for I is that we would have that same sense about our city. That we'd have that same sense about the people who God brings into our life. But I don't think we normally typically think that. We just sort of think that we're stuck with the people we work with. We have to be here in these situations. And the difference between the way Jesus saw people and the way that people around him saw people was he saw the people that God brought into his life as people that had been entrusted to his care. You see this very namely at the end of his life as he's talking with his disciples. John, I think it's around chapter 13 or so, all the way to the end of the book of John, all deals with the last sort of moments of Jesus' life. It's there from the time of the Last Supper all the way to the end. And so when you're in John 17, this is shortly after the Last Supper, where he's talking with God, and he says, John 17, verse 6, he says, I have revealed to those whom you gave me out of the world. See this sense? He says, these are people that you gave me. You entrusted these people to my care. These aren't people I just randomly met. These weren't people who just happened to be in my life. These weren't people who just sort of in my way. These weren't people who were just given to me so I can build up my ministry. No, these are people that you gave to me. And he says, they were yours, and you gave them to me, and they've obeyed your word. Now think about that. He says, God, these were your people, and you gave them to me. Like if you get blessed with the opportunity to have a child, you should never lose sight of the fact that this is God's child first and foremost. He's on loan, or she is on loan to me from God. Ultimately, God, they're yours, and they're just on loan for me, and so I want to care for them while they're in my possession, in my care. In your relationships, if you are so blessed as to be able to have a husband or a wife, what would it do to change the way you see this person as somebody that you whose care you've been entrusted with, rather than somebody who is there to serve you? I mean, just think about that one simple change. God, you've entrusted their care to me. Isn't there something that you say, like when you get married, that has something to do with that? Like, I promise to love, honor, care, nurture, provide for, all that kind of stuff. I don't know what all that was. I just want to get married, right? But somewhere in there is the pastor's looking at you. It's funny, as a pastor, you know, I've gotten married twice now. And the first time through, I really didn't pay much attention to the vows. They were just sort of like, yeah, I want to get married. Whatever I got to do it, let's just get married. The second time through, I was like hanging and thinking on every single word. You know, and I guess it's because by then I'd performed enough weddings and watched enough weddings fail that the words that you say at the ceremony, like let's go back and think through them. And actually, when you come forward, it's actually interesting. The very first thing you do is like the people are supposed to look at the pastor, and the pastor asks them a question, and their answer is, what? I do. And really what the pastor is basically saying, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to get into this relationship? Are you sure that you want to care for another person and think about their needs ahead of yours? Is that really what you want to do? And they say, I do. Another person says, I do. Okay, now look at one another and repeat after me. Then they say vows to each other where they're now telling each other what they're going to promise to do. And all of that, what you should walk away from this is a life that's been entrusted to your care, to love, to honor, to cherish. Yet so often we go into the marriage relationship thinking, this is somebody God's given to me. What's it say, to be a helper? That basically means you're there to make me happy. Isn't that what this is all about? You know, I'm looking for that special someone who will complete me, make me happy, do my bidding. I'll stop there. Jesus never saw the people that were gathered around him as anything other than people that had been entrusted to his care. And so he says, Father, you gave these people to me. They're yours, and you gave them to me. And I've led them to obey every one of your words. And now they know everything that you've given me comes from you. For I gave them the words you gave me, and they accepted them. So he says, you know, I understood that I was here with them for a time, and my job, my responsibility while I was with them was to teach them your word, to tell them about you, to take your words and give them to them, not just take them in for me and enjoy it for what I had, but my job when they were with me was to take your words and give them to them. And then he says, for I knew with certainty that I came from you, or sorry, he says, for they knew from certainty that I came from you and believed that you had sent me. So I saw, number one, my job was to tell them your word. Number two, my job was to tell them about me. Our job is to tell them about Jesus. So he says, and I pray for them. I'm not praying for the world, but for those you've given to me, for they are yours. I'm praying specifically for these people that you've brought into my life, not just these general prayers for anybody out there, but God, I'm praying for the people you've put in my life. Because all I have is yours and all you have is mine. And all glory has come to me through them. I will remain in the world no longer, but they'll still be in the world, and I'll be coming to you. Holy Father, protect them by the power in your name, by the name you've given me, so that they may be one as we are one. And while I was with them, by that name you gave me, no one has been lost, except the one doomed to destruction, as Scripture will be fulfilled. In other words, every one of them has been cared for and kept, except for Judas, which we all knew ahead of time was going to go and do what he did. This idea, this concept that people were entrusted to him, I think is what the church misses the most. Years ago when we first started the church, I made a statement, and the first time I made it, I had gasped. And almost every time I've said it, I get a gasp, but I'm trying to set it up right now so you won't gasp. Just sort of like, go with it. And the idea is that the church is not here for you. Yeah. What? Yes. Hopefully that was sarcastic at this point. The church is not here for you. See, oftentimes we come to a church in the modern day of church shopping and church hopping, we're sort of looking for a church that will meet my needs. I'm looking for a church that will do what I want it to do. I'm looking for a pastor who will teach the way I want to teach. I'm looking for a kids program that will do what I want them to do. I'm looking for a youth pastor who will change my kids and the way I've raised them. I'm looking for all these things of what the church will do for me. And sort of the goal of finding the right church is trying to find a place that will serve me the best. But that really wasn't what the church was designed to be. The church was designed to be a place that was here for the world. See, the church isn't here for you. Rather, you are the church, and you're here for the world. What if you saw your city as the people that God has entrusted to you? Now, some of you think that, you know, you are here by the Navy's decision. It's funny. No matter who I meet in town, I always say, so, well, you know, who in your family's in the Navy? Because really, nobody, other, like I said last week, nobody other than Fred Sturminger is really from here. Everybody is here because of the Navy or because their dad was in the Navy or because their grandfather was in the Navy. Usually within two or three generations, you'll hear the word Navy mentioned somewhere in there because that's how all of us get here. And we're led to believe that perhaps that we're here simply because some government official at some point wanted you here. But could it be that you're here because God wanted you here? Could it be because God wanted your gifts and your skills, your opportunities, your personality to be here, to do his work for his purposes? See, the people of God back in their history, they were taken into captivity. And many of you all have read Jeremiah 29:11. And you know, it's this verse that says, for I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, give you a great hope and a wonderful future. We read that verse, we think, oh yes, you know, I claim that in Jesus' name. Do you know the context of that? The context of that is these people had been ripped out of their hometown, taken to some foreign land with people from a different culture, different background, different customs, and they had no desire whatsoever to be there. And God says, but here's the thing, I want you to plant vineyards. In other words, I want you to put down roots here. I want you to build houses here. I want you to seek the blessing and the benefit of the city in which I've placed you in. And I've got great plans for you, and I've got great things in store for you. But you have to invest in the place and in the city where I've put you. And you see, it was this idea, this understanding that we've been entrusted with the people in the city. We've been entrusted with the care of the people around us. And the thing that Jesus had about him was he saw the people that God had put in his life as people who were entrusted to him. If you remember him, he was talking to the Pharisees in John chapter 10 and trying to explain to them some of this, the reasons why they just didn't get it. And he says, it's because I'm like a shepherd. I'm like a good shepherd to the people, you know. And other people have come in to the sheep pen, you know, fold, and they thought that they were leading these people, but they were just really hired hands. And at the first sight of trouble, what's a hired hand do? Up and runs for their life. But the shepherd is one who stays and protects. He says, I am the gate. You know what it means to be the gate? They would take the sheep, and they would put them in like a cave at night so they would be safe. And then where would the shepherd go? To the back of the cave, the safest part, in case a wolf came in, that way it would eat up all the sheep and he'd be safe, right? No, the good shepherd lays down at the front of the cave. So if anything's getting to them, it's got to go through me. And he looks at the Pharisees and he says, you know, you've always seen your position as one where you were lifted up to this high position so all the people in the church could serve you. And that was never really God's intent or desire for you. The idea was is that you would be there to serve the people, that you'd be there to protect the people, that you'd be there to care for the people, that you'd be there to lead the people into a right relationship with me. And you never got that. That's why he says, I am the good shepherd, and the shepherd has come to give them life and have life abundantly. And it's one thing to be able to see that for the people who come to church, but it's another thing to see that for the people who aren't here yet. You know, could it be that God has placed you where he's placed you because he wants an emissary, he wants an ambassador where only you can be, to be his hands, his feet on his behalf? And so often we cry out like the people did in Jeremiah and say, God, why me? Why here? Why now? I want so desperately just to go home. I want so desperately just to get out of here. When are my 3 years going to be up? When can I just go home? And God says, no, plant a vineyard. In other words, you need to plant deep roots. You need to seek the blessing of the city, seek the prosperity of the city. You need to look at the person who annoys you, not as somebody who is there to be the bane of your existence, but rather somebody who God has entrusted to your care, that you might be the light and the hope for them. And I remember many years ago, I went to a church that I didn't like to invite people to. Any of y'all ever been there? Hopefully that's not you here now. Maybe you've been there. It was in seminary, and I was there because it was a great place where I could kind of like, you know, get an opportunity to serve and whatnot. But the problem was is they weren't too, they didn't have this mindset that they were there for the community. They were really there to sort of just like check off the box and do things that make God happy, I think was the concept of the church. And so when I would tell people about Jesus or I'd tell people about the relationship that I had with God that I wanted to share with them, the last thing on earth I would ever do is invite them to church because I was terrified of the experience they might have if they came. Because it was a very unwelcoming place. I found out later because one of my good friends was black and I invited him and then I found out it was a racist church, which I didn't know until I invited a friend of mine and he came back to me and says, you know what was said to me this morning? I was like, no. And I heard, I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. And I remember at that point I had a choice. Do I just up and leave the place or do I go back there and work for change? And I decided to stay and work for change. And that was a tough road to hold. And that was one of those decisions that was really hard to make. Do you up and leave because you disagree, or do you stay and try to enact change? And it was frustrating going to a church where I couldn't invite somebody. You know what makes all the difference in a church that you can invite somebody to and a church that you can't invite somebody to? You. It's the mentality you have about the reason you're here. You see, if you invite somebody to church, you know, like God, you are terrified of the experience that they're going to have when they show up, right? Because you're so desperately, like, what does it take to get somebody to actually say yes to come to church with you? Like, some of you, maybe this is your first time here, and you're wondering, why on earth am I here this morning? I've been there. I know what it's like to be that new person at church. I remember years ago, I was reading a book by Nelson Searcy, and he talked about this. He said, next Sunday, the Spirit of God will prompt hundreds of thousands of people in the United States and perhaps millions around the world to visit a church for the first time. And the Sunday after that, he's going to do it again. And God is consistently blessing his church with people visiting every week. So the question is, what are we doing to accept and honor this blessing? And then later he talks about how he says, God, you've entrusted me with almost 80 people over the past few weeks. And I'm sorry for how little I've done to prepare for their coming and to follow up with them after their visit. God, I believe these are unchurched people that you've entrusted to my care, and I've let you down. Now, when you come to church, do you just think to yourself, oh, yeah, I'm serving in the kids' ministry this morning. Okay, so I got to be there, what, 5 minutes before? Okay, I'll do that. I got to do that. And then I'm just, I don't know, why are you doing it? Well, just, you know, they always, you're supposed to join a service team, supposed to join a small group and whatever and move on. Do you see it as just something that you're supposed to do to be a part of the church? Or do you see it because you're there and trusted with the care and the love of people in your city? You know, people working out in the parking lot. I was reading this whole thing about different kinds of people who volunteer in the parking lot. Like, who on earth would want to volunteer in a parking lot only to face down the disdain of almost everybody who's going to attend that church this morning? You know who you are. You walk in, you don't want them telling you where to park, right? But maybe, just maybe, they've got a vision and a plan. Maybe they know there is a closer spot that you could park at, but maybe, just maybe, they're saving that spot for somebody who they look into the car and they see really needs that closer parking spot. Maybe they're saving that spot for a woman with small kids, and you're sitting there going, how come I didn't get to park up front? Well, maybe there's a reason. So if you are called to be there in the parking lot, do you see yourself there as just something you have to do because your wife signed you up for it? Or has God entrusted the people in that parking lot to your care for that morning? You know, people will decide within the first 7 minutes of pulling in that parking lot whether or not they'll ever come back. See, because there's a major spiritual warfare going on when people show up to church. On top of that, you add into the fact that going anywhere for the first time is a scary experience. Because you don't know the routine, you don't know the pattern, you don't know the rituals, and everything here you sort of take for granted. If you've been to Coming Church for a while, even when you came here, it was a little bit of new stuff, but you still kind of knew the routine. Do you know what it's like when you first go to a church and you don't know the routine? It's been many years for me, but I was a roommate and I, he and I went to different churches, and we started dating these two girls who were roommates, and they went to different churches, and so we decided we all wanted to try to find the same church we could all go to together. And so our plan was, for the next 4 Sundays, we were going to visit each one of our churches. And so one of the weeks, I'm not going to tell you what denomination it was a very formal church, and I'd never been in a church this formal. And so we went in and found our seat, And of course, we were dressed inappropriately because we didn't know it was a more formal church, so people were kind of staring at us because we weren't dressed the part. And as the service went on, it almost felt like we were in a comedy movie, all right? Because we had, here's two guys, both of us grew up in church. His dad's a pastor, okay? I knew I was being called to be a pastor, so we'd been in church like our whole lives, yet we had never felt more out of place than we had been that Sunday. We didn't know how to do anything in that place, okay? First of all, when you sang, I've sung in church all my life, and I would get up to sing, but for whatever reason, I couldn't sing along. You know why? Because they didn't sing, they would chant. Our Father. It was just this weird thing. And so I had no idea what was going on. And all of a sudden, my roommate starts chanting, and I'm listening to him chant, and I just kind of get a case of the giggles. You with me on this? That's not a good thing in a near empty room when everybody knows you're the visitor, right? So you're sitting in there, and you're like, and of course, by the time it finally overflows and just busts out, now everybody in the room is looking at you. But we had all kinds of problems. See, there was things in there where for some things you would stand up and for some things you would kneel. And it didn't say in the bulletin what you were supposed to do. And so we, no lie, literally we were like, in our church, if you had something in the bulletin, it was always a song. And so we see, okay, number 419. So we pick the thing, we stand up. By the time we look up, everybody's kneeling. And it's like, okay, so we quickly kneel down real quick. Well, the first time we kneel down, we don't know there's kneeling things that fold down. Maybe some, y'all know what I'm talking about? So we're on a concrete floor and our knees are hurting. And so Troy leans to a girl next to him and he goes, man, how many times you guys kneel? That hurts. And she goes, well, there's a kneeling rack. And he looks down and we're like, oh, dumb us, kneeling rack. So next time it comes with a kneeling rack, we're like, sure, we're going to do the kneeling rack thing. Well, little thing with a kneeling rack, there's a way to proper way to pull it down and an improper way to pull it down. If you put your hands on top and go back, there is a wood rail right across there which will rake all of your knuckles. And when it hits your knuckles in the right spot, you will release and drop the wood pew. And you know what will happen? Ping! And it will echo throughout the whole place. So, of course, everybody's preparing for prayer. We sit down and you hear this, ah, ping! So by this time, there's one of the priests who doesn't do anything in the service but just stand there and stare. And of course, who do you think he's picked out to stare at the whole service? He's sitting there with this big cross, staring right at us like you're ruining the service. And we don't know whether this guy's like a bouncer, like he's going to kick us out. What's going on? And, so Troy says next to you, I think we're being watched. And I'm like, yes, I know. He goes, we better not screw up the next one. Well, the next problem we had is they had new hymn books and old hymn books. And the numbers were all for the old hymn books. Of course, we're in a pew that has the new hymn books. So every time we would turn to something, we would be turning to the wrong place. Of course, everybody else knows these things by heart, so they don't even need to turn them and recite them. And so we're just going, just mouth watermelon, just mouth watermelon, just mouth watermelon. So that's all we're doing for every single reading. Well, then, towards the end, at offering time, you know what they do for offering time? Everybody comes forward. The pastor holds the plate. And you got to go look him in the eye and basically either put something in or not put something in. And I don't know what he would say to you, but we're just sitting there like, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? So we basically got out of the road. Then we turned right back around our aisle and went right back to our seat. It was like, we're not going up there. We're not going up there. Like, you wonder why we do the black boxes the way we do. Some of them are because of my own trauma. And then to top it all off, when the service is over, everything narrowly went out this one back door, and the pastor stands there and gives everybody a hug, whether you want one or not, as you walk out the door. And of course, there's only one thought in my mind at this point. How do I avoid having to get a bear hug before I leave this place? And we're looking for every exit we possibly can. And all of a sudden, Troy goes, hey, is that something over there? And I'm looking over there, and I turn back around, and he's gone. And then I see him on the other side of the pasture going. So yes, I had to get bear hugged by some pastor just to get out of the building. It was like a traumatic experience for us. Do you know that's what some people experience when they come here? And I don't know what does it for them. I don't know what we do that will do it to them. But my fear is that that would happen. And all it takes is for one person in the parking lot to have a sense of, I'm only here because my wife makes me, yeah, find a parking spot. All it takes is for one person who's there at the door to be more interested in talking to the person next to him than greeting him. You know the number one complaint is when somebody visits a church? Nobody said hi to me. Nobody said hi to me. All it takes is for somebody in the kids' room to not want to be working in the kids' room and not be rude, but just sort of be indifferent. That's all it takes. And people who come here for the first time, you know, they're looking for a sign. They think it's from God or wherever, to tell them this is the wrong place for them to be. They're looking for some reason why they don't have to come back. They fought God the whole time in coming here, and when they show up here, they're just looking for some reason to say, see, this is why I never come to church. See, this is why I shouldn't come here in the first place. And God's looking at you and me, and he's saying, can I entrust them to your care? Like right now, there's somebody sitting at home. All right, there's another service coming up at 10:15. They're sitting at home right now. And the Spirit's been moving them. I don't know what's been happening in their life, but the Spirit's been moving them and pushing them and prodding them to take a stab and visit a church this morning. And they're debating it. They're going back and forth over it. And the question, you know, always on my mind is, God, will you push them here? Will you push them here? That's my prayer every week. God, will you push them here? And my hope, and the reason why I do this, because like, I just look to God, and on your behalf, I say, God, you can trust us. You can trust us. We're going to love them. We're going to care for them. We're going to tell them about your son. We're going to teach your word. I want to be found trustworthy with them. Paul is a guy who got this when, towards the end of his life, he says to Timothy, in the opening chapter of his letter to him, he says, I just thank God, and I'm amazed that God would entrust me with his gospel. See, he saw the gospel of God as something he was entrusted with. I mean, do you know how crazy it is that God doesn't just come here himself and tell everybody about himself, but he asks you and me to do it on his behalf? Like, do you ever, like, have your kids go tell one of your other kids something and you wonder whether or not you can trust them with the right message? There's nothing more true than that song you heard. Probably many of y'all grew up knowing this song. If you hear it from your brother, you better clear it with your mother. You better get it right. Anybody know that song? The Facts of Life, right? How many of y'all never saw the show Facts of Life? Yes, y'all probably know Fresh Prince of Bel-Air song, but you don't know Facts of Life song. But was there ever a more true statement? If you hear from your brother, you better clear it with your mother. You better make sure you get it right. Why? Because you can't always trust your brother. Well, I'll tell my one son, hey, can you go tell the other kids? And the question you're wondering in your mind is, can I trust them to go deliver this message correctly? Right? And God has that same wonder about you and me every week. Can I trust you to deliver the message faithfully? His vision is that when people would come here, they would know what it's like to be in the presence of Jesus Christ. And he's wondering, can I trust you to be an accurate representation of Jesus Christ week in and week out? I've called you to go to the place where you work, the place where you go to school, the friends that you hang out with. I've called you to be in that place, and I've entrusted the opportunity for you to be my hands and my feet in that situation. And can I trust you to be Jesus to them? You're the only Jesus they'll ever see. You're the only Christian they may ever really get to know. And the question for you and for me is, do we see ourselves as one who's been entrusted or one who's just there buying our time until we get to go on to be to heaven? See, think about Jesus. He had everything. And he came down and he gave it all up on behalf of you and me. And every day he sought to see himself as being entrusted to the care of the people that God gave him. That's why at the end of his life he says, God, these are the people you entrusted to my care. Not one of them has been lost. I faithfully taught him your word. I told him who I was and why I was here. Then he looks to you and to me and he says, now you go and do likewise. Go into all the world and teach them. Teach them about me. Teach them about my word. Baptizing them. They might be followers. They might know that they've been loved by God. There's nothing more important than to have a loving relationship with me they'll enjoy for all eternity. Who do you need to see in your life as someone that God has entrusted you to, whose life he's entrusted to your care, that they may not spend eternity with God in heaven if you don't take up the mantle and see yourselves as being the person that God has called to be placed in their life? Would you join with me as we pray? Father, I'm so thankful for the people that you've put in my life over the years. who loved me enough to care for me, to shepherd me, whose care I was entrusted. Father, forgive us for sometimes seeing church as being all about us, for evaluating how it met our needs this morning. Because, Father, somebody else in this room invited somebody here this morning, desperately hoping that they might come in contact with you and be moved by your presence this morning. And if we who are the church are not the church and are not an accurate representation of your Son, Jesus Christ, they may never know you. We're disgusted when we see people in the world who use your name for hate. But Father, unless I see myself as being entrusted with this world and on mission for you, nothing will change. So Father, move our hearts to be your hands and your feet, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.